God bless injury time.
It's a good thing. It's actually a good thing for both of us.
It's a great thing for both of us. We can both equally be happy with added injury time this
yes,
week.
Most definitely.
Portland gets a draw in the 93rd minute. Seattle with 3 points in the 94th minute.
Give or take. I don't know. I was going crazy. I wasn't looking at the clock.
With Chad Barrett, future Golden Boot winner, I'm pretty sure.
Absolutely.
We called that on this podcast.
Yeah, we did. I think we called him for 34 goals, so it's shaping up perfectly.
How upset is Seattle going to be that Chad Barrett stole Dempsey's goal? Stole it.
Not too upset. Although, did you look at Clint's reaction after the goal?
He didn't look happy.
He didn't look happy, and I think... I don't know if there was like this moment where he thought the ball was going in and Chad Barrett just stole it, but there was no chance that ball was getting in the net. So if he goes back and looks at the replay, he'll see like Chad Barrett had to do that.
Clint Dempsey, who made everything that he made at Tottenham because of stealing goals like that, looked so angry at Chad Barrett. It was fantastic.
I think he just has a lot of pressure. He feels like he needs to get that goal. He's getting paid a lot. He loves that pressure. He feeds off of it. So,
yeah. So we're changing it up tonight. We are at M'Lady's Pub in Magnolia with a live studio audience. I got a woo.
They only want to talk about Stuart Holden's engagement.
Yeah, we're going to try and avoid that. But that has been the crowd suggestion so far.
Yeah, we'll just ignore them.
We'll just ignore.
We're pretty good at that.
So, are you texting me?
Now we're getting texts from the live audience. This is even better.
Good stuff.
How was the TIFO? Podcasting material. TIFO, good question. I was underneath it.
You were underneath it, so you have no idea.
The guy in front of us was having a little bit of problem getting it up over this light fixture, so I thought the whole thing was ruined from our little section where it wasn't going up. But it was probably some of the more complicated TIFO I've seen. Did you see any footage of it?
I haven't seen Seattle's,
so they
which makes this a horrible...
They pull up a row at the back, and then the front, like, folded out like a book. And so it was this, like, long, extended one-minute period of, like, this book folding out of the different years of history. And then the whole rest of the stadium had alternating green and blue, you know, pieces of paper that they were holding up. So the whole stadium was technically part of the TIFO. It looked really cool. You know how Barcelona has the different colors around the rings?
Yeah.
It wasn't quite to that level because we only had, you know, it alternated sections. But it looks pretty cool. If someone has a good, like, overhead shot, it looks pretty impressive.
That sounds great. The Portland TIFO was, at first, confusing. I believe the sentence was, "This is how the world knows where we are," which is kind of true. If we're going to claim to be Soccer City USA, that's kind of all we get to be.
Yeah, and you claim it when you play Philadelphia. That's like the, you know, that's the known rule.
The world only knows who we are when we play Philadelphia at home. So that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, clearly.
I'm going to start with Portland because I think that's more frustrating conversation that you'll enjoy.
I
thought that Portland played. There was an air in Providence Park that I think it's hard to... we haven't had before. It was an air of confidence, almost cockiness, where the players and the fans all felt like if Portland showed up, they'd get 3 points and they'd move on. And Diego Valeri had a quote after the game talking about how it wasn't the Philadelphia Union team that they expected.
Yeah.
And when I was watching the game, I was like, guys, please step up. Let's try something different. But we couldn't do it. By we, I mean Portland Timbers, not myself. I'm not a part of the team. But the Timbers just... They could get in the final third, but they couldn't do a single thing when they got there. I thought Philadelphia's back line was fantastic. I thought Maurice Adu, coming back, being like that fifth defender, really shut down the four-person attack of Portland. Chara had to get up. Will Johnson had to get up. And because of that, their lack of scoring, their lack of getting into the box and really completing passes there, Philadelphia just became more and more confident.
Yeah.
And if not for... a broken play at the end where Gaston Fernandez, who had been taking the corners all evening, actually stayed in the box and Will Johnson took the corner. I think the person that was supposed to mark Will Johnson didn't quite figure it out and didn't go to Gaston Fernandez, and that set him up for the game-tying goal, which was a very easy shot. It was a good goal.
So are you a little worried that a guy like Maurice Adu can bottle up Nagby like that?
That Maurice Adu can what?
Bottle up Nagby, really, really, you know, limit his offensive capabilities.
it wasn't as much of bottling up. Maurice Adoo was able to out-physical. It was crazy being there. We've talked about this before, how Omar Gonzalez is a big presence on the field. How much bigger a European-built player. Even Dempsey, I think, looks kind of big out there, very stands tall. Maurice Adoo, next to Darlington Nagbe, was a giant of a human being. And whoever he chose to stay with, whether it be Diego Valeri or Darlington Nagbe, that player was no longer involved in the game. It's game one. I'm not going to have a strong reaction and say Adu's going to be defender of the year from the midfield. But he definitely changed the game on Saturday. I will say, as a fan experience, and you can count to this, it was wet. It was pouring down rain in both games.
Yeah, it was. Fortunately, well, I don't know. I know your seats are down close to the field, but we're just behind the drip line, so it's kind of nice where it's like we sit there and we're pretty dry and we watch everybody else get wet, but getting in and out of the stadium, it was a downpour. You know, usually in the Northwest, you don't get rains quite like that, and it was wet.
I ran to the store after the game, and I leaned down to get something from the bottom level. Wow. Getting our pictures taken out here.
Yeah, it's paparazzi.
I leaned down to get something from the bottom floor.
Can we get security in here?
Security.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll take care of it.
And as I leaned over, a puddle of water released from my jacket onto the floor, onto the ground. I was like, wow.
Now, did you keep your cell phone in a Ziploc bag or anything?
Well, it didn't come out. I didn't take any pictures.
And you're asking me why it keeps turning on and off all the time.
Oh, my phone is a piece of garbage.
Right there.
It is a piece of garbage.
Yeah, well.
So let's transition to the transition to the Sounders game.
So, coming into the game, going up against defending champion, MLS Cup champion, Kansas City.
Can I interrupt you for one moment?
Yeah.
Kansas City plays tomorrow, correct, in the Champions League? I know that San Jose plays tonight. LA plays tomorrow night. Why didn't those teams get bye weeks? Maybe I'm wrong about Kansas City, but I'm relatively certain they play tomorrow night. That's a tough turnaround to play in Seattle. And then Thursday, like I said, it's time for MLS to win a Champions League. Let's set up our teams to do better with that.
Yeah, they need to do a better job of helping those teams out. Now, last year they did with Seattle. They really backloaded their schedule, so we had very few MLS games at the beginning of the year. So they did try and do a little bit.
And that's not very helpful either.
No, not necessarily. Well, either way, it's going to kill you. The thing is, with the rosters, how they're set up, they're not set up to help you win the Champions League. I mean, the thing about teams in Europe is that they just have more flexibility. They have deeper rosters. So when you get into a Barclays Premier League game after you just came off a Champions League game, you have guys who can step up, and there's a drop-off, but there's not like a crazy drop-off. There's an MLS, just the difference between the starters and the backups is much greater. And
yes.
Part of it is the salary cap, and part of it is the roster. But until that gets fixed, I think it's really going to be tough for an MLS team to win. Plus, we're also dealing with spanning two seasons. Like, that's pretty crazy for a team to come out in their preseason type of game, being in the knockout round of the Champions League. It's just, I mean, the cards are stacked against them. Not that I'm making an excuse for the MLS team, but I think there's some steps that can consider the roster. That would really help out some of these teams.
So let's dive into the game,
which
I was able to watch the majority of it. It was definitely it was a mess out there for a while. At least in my opinion, watching it on television, it was wet. The play, it looked a little shaky. Go ahead and give me your perspective from the crowd.
Yeah, it was one of those games. It's the first of the year. You kind of expect
absolutely.
That. And it's also Kansas City, who has one of the best defenses in the league. So you kind of expected that. I mean, their center backs are great. Bessler's amazing. So coming in, you knew it was going to be a defensive battle, and it was just a matter of whether one of the teams could create something, whether Zuzi could get that perfect cross in, or whether Dempsey could come on later, or Oba could break down, you know, the back line for Kansas City. So it was kind of how I expected it to play out, sloppy, because it's the first game, the weather was bad, the pitch, you know, when it gets wet, is just hard to control things, and so there was a lot of play in the midfield, but when it came from crossing from the midfield into the attacking third through the forwards, there was just not a lot there. And I don't know if it was because it was two good defenses or it was also just the first game of the season or some combination of both. And I would assume it's some combination of both. Things started changing when Seattle made some subs in the second half and the team started getting tired and you could just see guys breaking down the wings. Now, Sean Okoli came in. And
is that the rookie?
Yeah, he's a homegrown player, played at Wake Forest.
So he's
a 20-year-old, really
exciting.
You
had talked to me about another rookie I don't believe it was him. And we had talked about maybe him making a difference. And then I saw the sub on Saturday. I was very surprised to see him. And he played really well.
Yeah, well, we have a few rookies. Aaron Kovar's another. And then I probably also was talking about Dylan Remick, who's really only played... He played one game last year. He was a draft pick for us last year. And he started for us at left back and did a great job. But Okoli's a guy I've always been high on. He's explosive, and he scored a ton of goals for Wake Forest. And he plays that attacking winger, forward-type player. But as soon as he came on and as soon as Dempsey came on, there was just all sorts of space that started opening up because teams were getting tired. And Sean Okoli just down that right side was just all over the place. I mean, there were a few through balls in there where he was just getting on the end of them and he had all sorts of space to do whatever he wanted. And then also it was amazing. He had some really good composure. There were a time when a defender was sprinting out at him and he just kind of waited and faked a pass and then dribbled on by. Made actually just a little bit too far of a through ball, which could have been great, but for a 20-year-old, he looked really composed out there. It was really, really exciting to see.
Some players that I thought played really well for Seattle from a perspective of a Portland fan. I thought Yedlin played really well.
Fantastic. You know, the good thing about Yedlin is he's making great runs. His crossing looked better, and his defense looked better. Like, in all facets of the game, he looked miles ahead of what he
And even the better. Fourth facet of his game, which is his hair, was fantastic.
It's true.
I thought Kenny Cooper gave... something that Obafemi Martins probably didn't have last year. And even though Nagel got the start, I thought Cooper and Martins playing up top together was a little bit more intimidating than I expected.
Yeah. I think Cooper plays well with him because he plays a little bit more withdrawn and he's willing to get the ball played to him and work with the ball like that. Both Eddie Johnson was more out there just to score and play off the back of the defender, kind of like Obafemi Martins would, and Eddie, when he gets down and dribbles, his main purpose is looking for a goal, and I think, you know, Cooper has more of an eye and is willing to pass that ball back. So if they can figure things out, their chemistry could be fantastic, and I think we can see a lot of goals, especially from Obafemi Martins.
All right. Before we get into Vancouver, let's spend a minute in Portland, Seattle, one more minute here, where... Let's imagine those games where the Seattle game ends after 92 minutes and the Portland game ends after 91. And what is the fan perspective? What's the coach's perspective with, for you, a 0-0 draw, and for Portland, a 0-1 loss? What would that look like in Seattle?
Based on the play, I wouldn't be too surprised. I think that the result would have been fair if it was 0-0, honestly. I think both teams played to a draw. I think it was pretty fortunate that the Sounders pulled out that goal, although they did get some good chances late on. I think fans would have been a little sad just because it's the first game of the season and you're always hoping for a win at home. But I don't think people would have been extremely upset knowing that they had just drawn with, you know, arguably one of the best teams in the league last year. That's still pretty dang good. So I think it would have been mild disappointment, and then a little bit of worry, especially with Toronto coming into town next week. Like if you start with just 2 points in your first two home games, or maybe even get a loss against Toronto, then you know things can start to get a little bit worrying. But I don't think anybody would have been freaking out too badly. I think the fan base would have been all right with it.
Okay, let me take you another step. Let's say Dempsey has his last kick, or he has the header that hits the crossbar, and then he has his last kick come a little short. Let's say Chad Barrett isn't there. Is there frustration with Clint Dempsey this week? Is there frustration from maybe more than the fans, maybe the coaching staff, maybe Dempsey himself?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of talk of frustration. I think there'd be a lot of excuses about him flying back from Cyprus, never training with the team, you know, kind of not being ready to play 90 minutes. I think there'd be plenty of excuses, but at the same time, there'd be like that thought in the back of your mind, like, is something going on here with Dempsey? Like, are we not going to see something? But I think that would have been completely premature. So I think you would have heard whispers, but nothing really concrete yet. It's way too early. It's the first game of the season. You can't be freaking out about Dempsey's performance after 30 minutes on the field.
I'll bring it on to Portland for a moment. Gaston Fernandez had that final goal. For a striker, that one goal can cover so much as far as errors go in a game, where him hitting that goal in the 93rd minute, I think is going to maybe even give him a shorter memory of how he wasn't clicking. He didn't have the right chemistry on the pitch, and that's going to develop over time. But from the preseason game 2 weeks ago to Saturday's match, he moved less, he got the ball less, he touched the ball less, and he couldn't do anything with it once he got it. That goal, I think, can cover a lot. So if you take away that minute from Portland, I think you see a slightly more frustrated Gaston Fernandez instead of a player who's probably going to play free on Sunday. And I think that goes a long way. I think overall the sense from Portland is frustration. Will Johnson was the angriest press conference I've ever seen him in. And it's not like the Timbers won the MLS Cup last year. They lost in the playoffs. And he wasn't frustrated that time. He was more frustrated on Saturday because Philadelphia came in. They were out physical. They outplayed him. I'll be honest with you, and I might be wrong, but I pity Chicago on Sunday. They gave up 3 goals to Chivas, and I think Portland might pour it on. And if they don't, I think Portland has cause for concern. But I would not be surprised with 3 goals or more in that game for Portland.
Now, you remember what I said about Chivas last week.
I understand you and the MLS website threw Chivas on there as soon as they won 3-2. They had 9 points in their first 3 games last year.
All I'm saying is Mauro Fernandez is definitely on my fantasy team.
AJB? Torres looked great. I will say that.
He always looks great. I think he's just got he's had such a crappy team around him that you just lose sight of his talent. So it's really going to be nice to see him shine with, a little less of the pressure all on him. Like, if you marked out Torres, Chivas had nothing last year. So now that they have some other creators in there with Mauro Rosales, I think he's just going to see a lot more space on the field, and you're just going to see him blossom.
The performance of the weekend for Cascadia Clubs, though,
oh, man,
does go to Vancouver.
Who saw that coming?
I did not. I do want to say, it's week one. New York had an entirely new back line playing together for the first time in MLS, but Vancouver struck the ball from outside the 18 better than any MLS team in one game I've seen in a long time.
And they had such crisp passing.
Passing was great. Fernandez, the Uruguayan, whom Carl Robinson and the Vancouver Whitecaps signed without ever having scouted him. I made fun of them mercilessly, and I was dead wrong, because that guy can play. Laba Fernandez, Matias Laba, and he kind of played a defensive mid with Nigel Rio-Coker. I think that might end up being on par with something that Ozzy gives to Seattle, something that Will and Diego Chara give with Portland. And that is incredibly high praise, but the way that they dominated New York, who didn't play with a forward, Thierry Henry didn't play, but New York never had a chance, and they never went forward. Vancouver was able to score at 4 goals. Kenny Miller looked fast. Darren Maddox and him played incredibly well together. They didn't play 2 up top. They played staggered. And Maddox, I remember there was one goal. Instead of the second goal, Maddox held the ball up at midfield, and then as soon as he held it back, passed it back to Kenny Miller, he took off. And he's faster than any defender in the league. And there's no defender that's going to be faster than Darren Maddox. And it was impressive to see. And I'm going to hold off judgment of Vancouver. I'm going to say maybe we were wrong, but it's far, far too early to tell.
If we are wrong, I feel like we need some Vancouver representation on this pod, because we've just kind of been bashing them a little bit.
If you want to represent Vancouver, let us know. Email us at thecascadiapod@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter @thecascadiapod. Your food just got here. How excited are you?
It did. I'm almost as excited as you were to see that bridesmaid or the bachelorette party 2 weeks ago. I'm almost to that level.
That you're that excited?
Yeah, it's pretty close. Mm.
What if your wife was in the audience? How would that make you feel after that sentence? I don't think she can hear you.
I don't think she can, which is great. Although you're giving away our audience here, you know?
Your ears like a cat.
All our adoring fans are
not sounding as adoring. Talk about what mistakes we've made in the past few episodes.
Go for it. I think I'm pretty solid.
So We had the City thing, where we talked about how City was going to win the Premier League.
We were talking about Manchester City and Norwich City all at the same time. We were trying to cover as many cities as possible because we wanted to increase our chances of predicting the Premier League champion,
just
right?
Just in case.
Yeah.
Just in case one of those two win, we want to make it clear.
So just to clarify, we're talking about Manchester City to win the Premier League.
I said that Urruti was sold to Portland. He was traded because MLS isn't... They don't buy and sell humans, which is nice.
Correct. Single entity, man.
Single entity. What other mistakes do we make?
We probably said a lot of unintelligent other comments that I probably don't want to rehash, but I apologize for that. And any lack of humor, which happens all too often.
Yeah. At least we got the Vancouver stuff right. We knew Stanley Park was in there.
It's true.
It's good stuff.
We did pick major landmarks of a major, major Canadian city. That was a great job by us.
Oh, my producer is channeling in our ear. He's talking about how great Nigel Rio-Coker is, or something along those lines. Yeah, that was it. And
huge plug for Nigel there. He's going to appreciate that one.
In case Nigel's listening.
Yeah. Well, I know he is.
Yeah. So, I actually am fortunate enough. I'm going to get to go to both Seattle's game this weekend and Portland's.
Yeah, so tell me, from an outsider's perspective, could you tell me a little bit about what you're excited to see from the Seattle-Toronto game? What you're expecting to see, maybe even?
Oh, I'm genuinely excited. I think Toronto is going to be an exciting mess to start. I think Jermaine Defoe and Michael Bradley are going to give that offense maybe a level that they haven't had in Toronto in quite a long time. And I think that chemistry might be a little overrated with those two. You know, I think they're going to cover a lot of bases and they'll be fine. Two very professional players. But I think their defense is a little bit farther away than you'd think. And you bring in a new goalkeeper to start right away. If Julio Cesar starts, I assume he will. There's usually a little bit of a mess. And I'm thinking it could be the complete opposite of Kansas City-Seattle. I think it's going to be 3-3 or something along those lines, which sounds great.
I think that's entirely possible, especially if the weather's great. You know, balls are sticking on the pitch, and Clint's able to control the ball a little bit better. I assume he'll be starting for the team. And I think that lineup will be pretty solid, except maybe Clint will come in for Lamar. They might sub in Leo for Dylan Remick if they think they need a bit more defensive.
Did you see Ziggy's comments today about Leo Gonzalez being the starter just whenever he's ready?
Yeah. Yeah, he's kind of penciled him in, which is a little bit surprising because of how well Dylan Remick played.
Penciling him in, better than, you know, penning him in. You want to put ink on that.
Yeah. So I'm not completely surprised, but I wouldn't be shocked if Dylan Remick gets more time later on in the season. And I really think it'll depend on the matchup. Like, if we're looking to lock down a side, we're going to start Leo. But if we think we might need this little extra burst, I wouldn't be surprised if we put in Remick, you know, just gamble a little bit. I mean, think about it. We started Shalry as a forward last year, so there can't be any crazier things to do on this roster.
Speaking of crazy things, so Zach Iwani ended up coming in for the Timbers about the 85th minute, and he hasn't played a single preseason game. He hasn't really done anything up to this point because of injury, and I felt like Caleb Porter was trying to cap tie him. I was like, is that a rule? Is that a rule in MLS? Like, just we might lose him if we don't play him this game. He ended up having a shot on goal. The Timbers only had two all game. It was Zach Iwani's shot on goal to set up the corner kick, and then the corner kick won the game.
There you go. It's like the assist to the assist to the assist.
So, Zach Iwani,
man of the match.
Leading MVP candidate.
Yeah, he's my man of the match for sure.
Yeah. Your breakdown? That's from your breakdown?
Yeah,
your
definitely.
Personal breaking down of film?
Some blogger gold right there. Zach Iwani, man of the match.
Yeah. So we recorded this on a Tuesday night, and the reason for that, one, you were hosting some sort of family event where every single one of your extended family members was in your home, and I had no voice Sunday night. Preseason form.
Yeah, I didn't either. Definitely out of shape as far as the voice goes.
I felt like I was letting my team down because I sang my heart out on Saturday and had nothing to give Sunday.
Yeah, true story. I had to go to a wedding after that game, so I was going to try and leave early, which you can't do from a soccer game. Like, I never leave early. So I stayed there for the Chad Barrett winner, then I ran down to the pitch to see him, you know, say goodbye to the crowd, thank him and everything, and then I sprinted out, ran to my car, which is parked three blocks away in a parking lot that cost me like $50 or some insane amount of money, and I'm sitting there in my car, and I parked in the spot with like a huge overhead light, and I'm just stripping down, just tearing off my wet clothes, getting into a suit, and this huge family walks around the corner with like these small kids, and
yeah,
here
small
I am
children.
With like pants going up my leg. Oh, it's priceless. So,
are you a wedding dancer, Ben?
Am I a dancer?
Are you a wedding dancer? There's a difference between dancer and wedding
dancer.
So
here's the thing. I had to drive home that night, so there was no amount of alcohol that I could put in my body that would allow me to drive home and also dance. Like, those two things don't go hand in hand. Either I have a designated driver and I dance, or I don't dance. So I didn't dance. Easy as that. It's pretty much science. It's a mathematical
pretty
equation.
Pretty much science.
Yeah, 0.08. That's when I can dance.
Science. 0.08.
Fact.
Cool. Well, I think we should wrap this up. You can follow us on Twitter at Ben Slager without vowels, BNSLGR, or at Jeff Budke with vowels, at JEFFBUDKE.
Sounds
good. Anything else? Anything for the good order?
Here's to 3 points against Toronto next week.
And Chicago. And we'll see if Vancouver can keep this up. I actually am genuinely, it'd be fun.
How fun would it be if these three teams were vying for the Supporters Shield spot or top of the West?
Just now that, I wanted to talk about this. I'm glad, really quick before we end. With Seattle playing as well as they have, they made the playoffs every year of their existence. With Vancouver now having had made the playoffs and had a down year, and Portland now as, you know, with Caleb Porter, just a completely new dynamic to their team, a team that truly wants to be the best. It's a race for the star. That first star on the jersey in Cascadia, it's going to end a lot of arguments.
It is.
It's going to end so many arguments.
I mean, we'll always have our history, but there's going to be something special about that first MLS Cup for one of these teams.
That's why this pod is the best pod in the world, because it's a true race. Whoever gets that first, it's just going to be a walk-off, like, oh, well, Seattle has 68,000 fans, and I can just look at you and point to this little star over the Portland crest. And if you ever got to do that, it would suck. I would hate it so much. And I think that's kind of cool now to have possibly three playoff teams from Cascadia. What a cool moment that would be.
Indeed. It really will be. It'll add this extra element, as if Cascadia games could get any crazier. I think it'll just add this extra little element of insanity to it all, and I love it.
Ben, Cascadia forever.
Cheers.
Cheers.